Hello and welcome back to part two. This week we are looking at the case of Elizabeth Fritzl. And if you haven't listened to part one, please do go back and listen to that before listening to this part. And that was it, I think, Bethan, in terms of the recap. Or did you want me to do a recap in terms of where we got up to?
No, I think that's fine. Just, yeah, if you haven't listened to part one, head and listen to that first. This won't make any sense if you just start off here. So we left part one with Elizabeth being forced to install the final door in the area that would ultimately be her prison. It's so, so unbelievably cruel.
It's like having to dig your own grave before being shot, isn't it?
It really, really is. That is exactly it. I couldn't work out what it was that made me think of that, but it is. It's like being made to dig your own grave. Although she didn't realise that at the time. She was just told to go and put this door in. She'd had no idea, and she was about to just go to Vienna, a young woman, but legally a woman, so she could.
Yeah, the police wouldn't be able to bring her back this time. She would have, had agency over her own life and future, and she would have gotten away with it.
Gotten away from him, yeah.
Gotten away from him, absolutely. She was so close.
After four agonisingly long days chained up in total darkness, Elizabeth, now starving, weak, hypothermic and dangerously dehydrated, was suddenly stunned into blindness by the lights being turned on. As her eyes slowly readjusted, she saw her father standing over her. He gave her food, water, a blanket, and he replaced her short chains with a longer one that had been fashioned into a makeshift leash, which he then shackled tightly around her waist. So this gave her the freedom to move around the dungeon freely and to use the bathroom. And he then raped her. Elizabeth resisted as best she could, but she was still weak and disorientated after 4 days of isolation with no food or water, so resistance proved to be futile. Once Fritzl had finished with her, he callously left her all alone again. The lights remained on this time, but Elizabeth was still chained up and locked in like a caged animal. For the first time, she had the chance to look around and get acquainted with her grim new surroundings. So the basement was made up of several compartments. It featured a single bed, a tiny living area, a separate restroom just beyond that. There were no windows. There was no inlet for any natural light. There was no ventilation for fresh air. It was small, cramped, dark, dingy, smelly, and airless. The roof was low, roughly 5'4" tall, so that meant that Elizabeth was unable to stand up straight. She had to stoop her shoulders to get around in the dungeon. The only way out was that thick and heavy steel door that was locked shut from the outside, and this door required an 8-digit combination code in order to be unlocked. This small, cramped and airless dungeon was to become Elizabeth's entire world for the next 2.5 decades. Meanwhile, upstairs, when it became clear to Elizabeth's mother, Rosemary, that her daughter had suddenly disappeared, she filed a missing persons report, and the police agreed to investigate, but they were quick to point out that, in all likelihood, Elizabeth had simply run away from home again. After all, she'd done it several times before. The only difference was, this time, she was now 18 years old, and she was not legally obligated to come home if she didn't want to. Days later, Fritzl handed a letter over to the police which he claimed he'd received in the post that was written in Elizabeth's handwriting, and the letter stated she was tired of living with her family, she was staying with a friend, she warned her parents not to look for her or she would leave the country. Fritzl told police that she had most likely joined a cult because she'd mentioned a religious group several times in the run-up to her disappearance. The letter had actually been written by Elizabeth down in the basement under extreme duress from her father. But the police accepted that Elizabeth was safe and well and had simply decided to go her own way in life. The investigation was abandoned and no further inquiries were made. Elizabeth was well and truly on her own now.
I think that's a really difficult part of this because she did write that letter, albeit under duress, and she would have really had that realisation as she's putting pen to paper. I have no hope in hell of getting out of here now because the authorities will more than likely accept that this is correct. It's in my handwriting. I've got previous history of running away from home. They're probably going to accept that at face value and no one's going to come looking for me.
And that's the most cruel element, isn't it, as well, is that kind of hopelessness.
Yeah. And she is having to confront that.
In the beginning, Fritzl strapped Elizabeth up by her arms and then kind of tied her arms behind her back with an iron chain, and he then secured that to metal posts behind her bed. So Elizabeth could only move approximately half a metre either side of the bed. After several days, he gave her more freedom of movement by attaching that chain around her waist. And then about 6 to 9 months into her imprisonment, he removed that metal chain altogether. However, this wasn't out of some sort of kindness. This was only because it was getting in the way when he was trying to sexually assault his daughter. After each and every rape in the dungeon, Fritzl would then get dressed, leave the basement, and casually go back upstairs to eat a meal at the table with the rest of his oblivious family. The dinner conversation would quite often turn to Elizabeth and her possible whereabouts. Fritzl would play along. He'd feign concern and ignorance and offer suggestions and theories as to where in the world she may have gone. He never once alluded to the fact that she was in fact chained up and suffering unimaginably just a few metres below their feet.
It's just heartbreaking to think for Rosemary, for example, and also Elizabeth's siblings. They are literally just feet away from her, having a conversation, trying to work out where she's gone. And the entire time she is there, just a few feet below them. It's just so weird to think that, isn't it?
Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of a Spanish film I saw years ago. I think it was called The Orphan or just Orphan. And it was a Spanish language film. I mean, I was gutted when I got to the cinema and realised it was subtitles because I don't do that.
You had to read.
I had to fucking read for 2 hours.
Is that a horror film? I feel like
it's not. No, there's another one that's a bit like that, but it kind of is a bit like that, but it's basically a couple adopts this boy, a young boy, and bring him into their home, and then he goes missing, and they spend ages looking for him, you know, months looking for him, and then basically a few months later, they find his body underneath the house in, you know, it was like a big rambling house that they lived in. And he'd just gotten sort of trapped, unfortunately, in the cellar and couldn't get out. And, you know, they'd heard banging, for example, in the sort of days after his disappearance. And they thought the house was haunted and they thought it was his ghost. And, you know, I'm not doing the film justice, but it was just heartbreaking that the whole time they were looking for him, he was below them and he was alive and he was desperately crying out for help. And they didn't realise that that was their son that was trapped there. And of course, you know, he died very sadly. I mean, it's a film, but yeah, fantastic film. Do look it up. But yeah, it just kind of reminds me a little bit of this because the whole time they're thinking, where is he? And the same with Elizabeth, where is she? She is there. She is in that house just a couple of feet away.
Oh God, that sounds like an awful sad film.
It's terrible, Bethan. It was so fucking sad.
I'm not going to watch that then. Thank you for making sure I didn't.
Yeah, if you want to ruin your day, watch that film.
You've done this a lot to our listeners.
I know, I still get people...
still say, I watched Eden Lake and I hate you now, Mark.
I know, and I'm sorry. Yeah, but I've had to watch it. I sent you something earlier, didn't I, Bethan, on WhatsApp. I was like, I've seen this, so you have to see it now.
Yeah.
I can't unsee it, so I have to share
that
burden.
So now I can't unsee it either.
Yeah.
To this day, there are people who do not believe that it would be possible for Fritzl to have kept such a secret in his house for such a long stretch of time. Some people even believe that Rosemary, whilst not necessarily in on it, had a good idea of what was going on, but was too scared to confront Joseph about this. We will discuss this in a bit more detail later on. But if Rosemary did have any suspicions at that stage, she certainly failed to act on them. Fritzl and now Elizabeth were the only people on Earth who knew the dungeon even existed. Fritzl had made it clear to his family that the basement was his workspace, strictly forbade them from ever going near it. So therefore, it never even occurred to Rosemary or any of Elizabeth's siblings to even go down to the basement and have a proper look around. Even if they had thought of that, they would have been far too afraid of Fritzl to even think about going down there. And I think that even if Rosemary thought that he had something to do with Elizabeth going missing, she may have had suspicions that he'd killed her. I think it's beyond anybody's imagination that he had her chained up down there in the basement.
Oh, completely agree. I think, yeah, her worst scenario would be that he has murdered her. Absolutely. She's not going to be thinking that she's down there. And I also think with this, had any of the family ventured down into the basement, it wouldn't have been obvious that this was a 200 odd square foot essentially a flat, isn't it? You know, a subterranean flat. Yeah. That wouldn't have been obvious because there are multiple doors. So, you know, it would have just looked like a bit of a workspace and there would have been these hidden doors. So, yeah, even if they had the bravery to go down and look around, they wouldn't have ever discovered the hidden compartment.
Over the following days, weeks and months, the horror for Elizabeth was unrelenting. The dungeon was cold and damp and infested with rats. It got so bad that Elizabeth was sometimes forced to catch and kill the rats with her bare hands. The condensation was another issue. The humidity caused it to run off the walls in such large quantities that Elizabeth had to use towels to soak it up. And naturally, this caused the interior of the dungeon to become covered in mould and mildew. And then in the summertime, the situation went from one extreme to the other. The whole place turned into an intolerable, sweaty sauna from which there was no respite. The worst part for Elizabeth, however, was the relentless, endless boredom. She was trapped in a tiny prison with nothing to do. Every now and then her father would bring her a book or a magazine to read, but with so many lonely hours to fill, it wasn't enough. The only break in this monotonous, unbearably monotonous daily routine was then worse because her evil father would show up to rape her, sometimes multiple times per day. In the early stages of her captivity, Elizabeth would resist Fritzl's advances, struggling, kicking, screaming, biting and fighting back, but it was never any use. The more she fought, the more her father would just savagely beat her into submission before raping her anyway. And over time, she learned that resistance was all but futile. She lost the will to preserve her dignity. She stopped fighting back altogether. But the limits of Fritzl's sexual depravity seemed limitless. Straightforward rape wasn't enough. A close friend of Fritzl's, who often accompanied him on Thailand to those sex holidays, once observed him buying sexy lingerie that was far too small to possibly be for his wife. And Fritzl had explained to this friend that he had a young, skinny girlfriend back home in Amstetten. His friend would one day be horrified to learn that this skinny young girlfriend Fritzl was referring to was in fact his own missing daughter, Elizabeth. Elizabeth would be forced to wear these degrading outfits for her father, and then on a daily basis have to endure the full force of his disgusting sexual appetite. He eventually brought a TV and video player down to the basement as well, so he could force his daughter to watch porn with him, and then he'd force her to act out his favourite scenes.
Oh my God, Bethan, this is
just... There's just no words, are there?
I mean, even, you know, before that, when you were talking about him buying the sexy lingerie and just the thought of him forcing his own daughter to wear that and then to enact these fantasies that he's watching on porn videos, I really am speechless at this.
And this is just how it continued. Days turned into weeks, weeks turned into months, and months became years. In the outside world, life continued as normal. During the years that Elizabeth dwindled in her makeshift underground dungeon, oblivious to what was going on outside, history as we now know it played itself out. Gorbachev called for the demolition of the Berlin Wall. Chernobyl's nuclear reactor blew up. DNA first came into use to convict criminals. There was the Tiananmen Square massacre, the release of Nelson Mandela, LA riots after the beating of Rodney King. O.J. Simpson was arrested for murder, which was in the script before, obviously, this week, and we now know that he's died. But at this point, he was arrested for murder. There was a genocide in Rwanda. Princess Diana died in a car accident. The euro was introduced as the base currency of the European Union. A tsunami devastated Asia. Science and technology made tremendous strides in this time. And the turn of a new century saw massive technological developments. So the mobile phone, the internet. And when you think of those 24 years, that's just such a small snippet of life across the world. But throughout all of these historical milestones, Elizabeth remained oblivious to all of that.
Weirdly as well, I think at the time during which she was incarcerated, it just so happened that there was an accelerated level of sort of development on things. And it was just, I don't know, it just feels like an awful lot moved forward very quickly in comparison to other decades. So it just happened that
I would agree.
Those 2.5 decades were 2.5 decades in which an awful fucking lot happened and she missed it.
Yeah. For everyone else, the world kept on spinning, but Elizabeth stood still and stagnant. It's hard to imagine a more unbearably sad existence. But against all odds, Elizabeth's situation only got worse, because 2 years into her captivity, Elizabeth came to the sickening realisation that she had fallen pregnant by her own father. She miscarried after 10 weeks. 2 years later, she fell pregnant again. This time she carried the baby to term, and on the 30th of August 1988, she delivered her first inbred baby all alone on the filthy basement floor. Despite the horrific circumstances, the arrival of a baby girl, who was named Kirsten, became a source of hope for Elizabeth, a faint beam of light in her otherwise dark and meaningless existence. For once, she was no longer alone in the basement. Caring for Kirsten gave her life a renewed sense of purpose. It forever alleviated the burden of extreme boredom, which had been plaguing her for so long, and having a baby gave her a sense of structure, a routine to follow, that whiled away the hours and the days and the months in her prison. There were tasks such as preparing meals, she had to maintain a basic level of hygiene, and managing the limited resources provided by Fritzl became a welcome distraction to the dire situation she was in. Furthermore, Elizabeth dared to hope that her father would bond with this baby and find it in his heart to allow them to go and get medical attention in the outside world. And this was very, very important because right from the start of her life, Kirsten was a very sickly and weak child. So this was as a result of the incest. Because of inbreeding, she was born with severe epilepsy and was prone to dangerous and terrifying seizures. And of course, it was made much, much worse by the fact that Elizabeth had been denied the proper prenatal care. Her living environment was not fit for an animal, let alone a heavily pregnant young woman or a young woman with a baby.
Even just the temperatures, you know, you talked about the environment down there, so, you know, very cold and damp in the winter, and then like a sauna in the summer.
Yeah,
and rats
that's just
scurrying around. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just, you really wouldn't want to put a dog there. You really wouldn't want to do that. You'd be, yeah, gobsmacked if someone was as cruel to do that. And this is a woman and her baby.
And the mold. You think about how poorly people get when they live in a house where there's mold. And this is literally, the walls are dripping.
Yeah. It's just, you know, no access to medical care. It's, yeah, I mean, it's a recipe for disaster, and then severely inbred as well.
Elizabeth was terrified that Kirsten would not survive down in the basement with her. So once again, she pleaded with her father to at least take Kirsten out of there and get her the help that she desperately needed. But Elizabeth had woefully underestimated how heartless and cruel her father was. He denied her request to go to a hospital. Instead, he brought her medical textbooks, clean towels and nappies, and then callously told Elizabeth that Kirsten's fate was entirely up to her. Elizabeth nurtured her baby. She worked tirelessly around the clock to keep her warm and nourished. Against all the odds, baby Kirsten survived. But her compromised immune system and lack of early years medical intervention did mean that she would suffer from regular bouts of poor health for the rest of her life. And there were now two prisoners in Fritzl's dungeon. As such, he had to put in extra effort to keep them both alive. Kirsten was a sick and needy child who needed food, medicine and baby supplies. It was up to him, solely, to provide these. Fritzl's sexual assaults did not decrease because of the baby. They continued with the same frequency as before, and Fritzl never used protection, so more rapes invariably meant more babies. 2 years later, Elizabeth gave birth to a baby boy who she named Stefan, and 2 years after that, she birthed another baby girl who she named Lisa. Lisa, like Kirsten, was negatively impacted by her ancestral genetics and suffered from a heart defect which caused her a lot of pain and discomfort. As such, she would just cry loudly and endlessly. And even though the basement was soundproofed, Fritzl began to worry that someone would hear her. Instead of doing the decent, humane thing and taking her and his other prisoners to hospital, he came up with a cruel plan. He told Elizabeth that he was going to remove Lisa from Elizabeth's care for good and take the baby upstairs to live in the house. Despite being devastated to be losing her baby, Elizabeth agreed to the plan because she believed this action would give Lisa her best chance at survival and a relatively normal life. The decision would have been a really difficult one for Elizabeth because she knew only too well what her wicked father was capable of. By letting Lisa leave the basement with him, she had no way to protect her baby. Lisa would never be completely safe whilst Joseph Fritzl was around, and for all Elizabeth knew, releasing Lisa to go upstairs and live may have been dooming her to the same miserable existence that she herself had suffered prior to captivity. But on the flip side, Elizabeth figured that nothing could possibly be worse for a baby than spending its life in a mouldy, rat-infested underground dungeon. The thought of that alone was more unbearable than anything else. So with a heavy heart and a tormented soul, Elizabeth kissed her baby girl goodbye, believing that this would be the last time she ever saw her. On the 19th of May 1993, in the middle of the night, as the rest of his family slept, Fritzl took baby Lisa upstairs and placed her in a cardboard box. And just before dawn, he put the box containing baby Lisa on the front doorstep for Rosemary to find. Inside the box, next to the sickly and pale baby, was a note that Fritzl had forced Elizabeth to write. And it began, "Dear parents, you will probably be shocked to hear from me after all these years, and with a real life surprise, no less. I'm leaving you my little daughter, Lisa. Take good care of my little girl." And the letter went on to explain that the religious sect that Elizabeth had apparently joined did not permit children, and provided important details and instructions for baby Lisa's care. The letter concluded by once again beseeching her parents not to look for her. Elizabeth was happy, doing well elsewhere. Fritzl played dumb and pretended to be just as shocked as everyone else. Without hesitation, Rosemary took baby Lisa into the home to raise as her own. The police and social services were alerted, and the Fritzls applied to legally adopt the infant. It was this that made me think that Rosemary... I feel like at this point, I think that she probably thought Elizabeth was dead, and I think that she maybe had concerns about her husband, but by this point, I think she'd just be so grateful. I think she genuinely believed this and was so glad that her daughter was alive, that she had someone, you know, she had this baby to care for. And with a husband and a home life like she had, her children and bringing up those children, having another baby to love, I do think that for Rosemary, this was something so wonderful for her.
Yeah, I think she probably would have spent many years resigning herself to the fact that her daughter had died, but still holding out a tiny bit of hope that that wasn't the case and that she was alive still. But yeah, this is, I suppose, yeah, she's going to have to just take it at face value. I just kind of dread to think of the acting capability of Joseph Fritzl. I can just imagine this, you know, this baby presenting itself on the doorstep and him acting as surprised as Rosemary and putting it all on. And I can just see that being quite cringe.
Yeah, I can imagine him kind of almost just being like, "Oh, well, if you want to take over this baby, you've got to look after it." And then just walking off. And she's
of course we will.
And he's kind of like, "Whatever. As long as you still cook my dinner, I don't care." Or, you know, he'd have kind of, just been like, "Oh gosh, what a surprise." But he could easily have got away with this, and he clearly did. You may be thinking at this point that Joseph Fritzl, a convicted rapist, would never in a million years be allowed to adopt a child, but under Austrian law, his criminal conviction was considered spent after just 15 years, so it didn't show up on any criminal record database searches, and so he and his wife were granted full custody of baby Lisa. As Lisa led a relatively normal life upstairs in the family home, the living nightmare for her mother and siblings continued. True to form, Fritzl ruled over his dungeon dwellers with an iron fist. Anytime he visited the basement, he commanded absolute obedience. He made chilling threats and often reminded Elizabeth and the children that he would not hesitate to pump deadly toxic gas into the basement should they ever try to escape or cause him trouble in any way. He also told them that any attempt to touch the electrical combination lock would result in them being electrocuted by it. He regularly beat the children for even minor transgressions, and he derived pleasure from raping their mother in front of them as a form of sick punishment.
Oh my God, just when you think it can't get any worse, he's raping Elizabeth in front of her children as a form of punishment. Jesus.
He'd also continuously torment Elizabeth by occasionally telling her that he was planning to release her the following morning, and then he'd just not show up for days afterwards, cruelly telling her he changed his mind, you'll be staying a bit longer. As the following years passed by, Elizabeth and her children were running out of living space, the children were growing, and the already pokey basement was becoming more and more cramped, and eventually Elizabeth once again fell pregnant. By now, however, her health was beginning to wane. Years and years of malnutrition and deprivation of sunlight and fresh air were taking their toll on her. She was severely anemic, she was pale and weak, her hair was becoming thin and grey, her immune system wasn't working properly, and she was exhausted and sick all the time. She was chronically depressed and often worried that her aging father would die suddenly. Of course, not from any love or affection for him, but imagine if he died. He's the only person on earth who knew where she was and where her children were. Should he die one day, her and her children would slowly starve to death. Elizabeth once again appealed to her father's humanity and begged him to finally release her and her children from their living hell, but he still refused and instead he put them to work. He decided to expand the prison and install a kitchen area and an extended living space. It was a huge project that would almost double the size of the basement. Despite her fragile condition, Fritzl forced Elizabeth and the children to begin digging out the dirt from the basement with their bare hands, and then he would smuggle it out and he filled several trucks with it. He also then smuggled in the necessary materials, so bricks, tiles, floor panels, etc., and gave Elizabeth and the children instructions on how to complete the job. Then, on February the 26th, 1994, before the basement expansion project had been completed, Elizabeth gave birth to her third daughter, Monica. However, Elizabeth was barely even given the chance to bond with her new baby. Almost as soon as baby Monica had been born, Joseph Fritzl cruelly snatched her from Elizabeth's arms in the middle of the night and took her upstairs with him. Again, she went in a box on the front doorstep, and early the next day, Fritzl pretended that he'd received a phone call from Elizabeth, who said, "I left her at your door," and then had hung up the phone. And yeah, there was a note with this baby again that he'd forced her to write. It had instructions on Monica's care and development, and again, they were granted the right to legally adopt that baby. The cruel and sudden confiscation of baby Monica broke Elizabeth's heart, and she soon fell into a deep depression. She'd had enough. She could no longer take the torment of life as an underground sex slave. She wanted to give up and die. But the only thing keeping her alive was her love and sense of responsibility to protect and care for her remaining children. For Elizabeth, the nightmare was not yet over, and in fact, it was about to get a whole lot worse. About a year after Monica had been taken, Elizabeth fell pregnant once again, and on April the 28th, 1996, Elizabeth went into labour. After several hours of pain on the dirty basement floor, she gave birth to a baby boy. But when the intense pain and contractions failed to ease off after the birth, Elizabeth was horrified to realise that she was giving birth to twins. Less than an hour later, she birthed another boy. Elizabeth named the twins Alexandra and Michael. She quickly bundled them up warm and began trying to care for them as best she could. But she soon realised that something was seriously wrong and baby Michael was dangerously sick. When Fritzl came down to the basement later that day, he found Elizabeth in a state of hysteria. Baby Michael was turning blue and he was struggling to breathe. Elizabeth was doing what little she could to help him, but it was clear that the little boy did not stand a chance without emergency medical attention. Once again, she threw herself at her father's feet. She begged him with all of her heart to take Michael to a hospital. However, true to his profoundly evil nature, he refused and left the basement, leaving Elizabeth all alone to deal with the situation. By the time Fritzl returned to the basement 3 days later, he found his pale-faced and heartbroken daughter Elizabeth cradling Michael's tiny dead body. Joseph Fritzl's response to this tragedy was nothing short of monstrous. What he did next demonstrated the peak of the cruelty of which he was capable of. With zero emotion, he pulled Michael's dead body from Elizabeth's arms and took it out of the dungeon, casually tossed the little baby's corpse into the basement furnace, and also kind of threw in all of the regular trash that he'd collected from the dungeon that week, and watched as the evidence of his horrific crimes turned to ash. He then returned to Elizabeth and raped her. The surviving twin, Alexander, was then snatched away from Elizabeth and taken upstairs to be discovered, like the others. And again, Alexander was legally adopted by Joseph and his wife. So this is now three children that they've adopted. He was able to then live that kind of relatively normal life. He was absolutely oblivious of the horrible circumstances of his own birth and what Elizabeth had gone through at that time. Several more years passed, and by the year 2007, Joseph was getting older. The task of keeping his three secret prisoners alive was growing tiresome. He was now in his 70s. He wasn't as sexually active as he used to be. He wasn't as attracted to his daughter as he once had been. Indeed, the abysmal state of Elizabeth's physical health had left her a grey-haired and wrinkled shell of her former self. She was hunched, frail, and although she was just 41 years old, she looked much closer to 50, if not older. The rewards for Joseph were just not there anymore. The mounting health problems of Elizabeth and the children grew more problematic as they got older, and it was up to Joseph to manage all of it. It was all work and no play, and after 24 years of sadism, the monster's thirst for evil had finally been satiated. Joseph began making plans to release his prisoners, but he still did not want his multitude of crimes to ever come to light, and he needed a way around it. This is common in kidnapping cases, and it's the reason why so many victims of kidnapping don't survive the ordeal. The risk of them turning their kidnapper in is just too great. But Joseph decided not to kill his daughter and incestuous children. Instead, he planned to eventually force Elizabeth to write a letter to Rosemary announcing that she decided to leave her religious cult, that she was heading home with her three children, but this time she was going to provide a location. Joseph would then paint himself as the hero because he'd drive off and then he'd emerge victorious with his lost daughter in tow, having gone bravely to rescue her. How he planned to ensure that Elizabeth and the basement children kept their mouths shut forever was anyone's guess, but Fritzl needed to kind of figure that out. He started planning, he started brainstorming all the different solutions that he could think of.
See, that's what I was gonna say. I just can't, you know, I mean, his mind is so warped, I guess, anyway, there's no logic there. But in what world does he think that they are not going to tell somebody about this at some point in their lives and that he's going to get caught?
Yeah. I guess, again, it's that vanity and his self-belief that they will do what he tells them. Because everyone has up until this point, haven't they? Everyone True. Does whatever he tells them. Mercifully for everyone involved, fate intervened before Fritzl had the chance to carry out his kind of probably a bit rubbish exit scheme, because he'd have to somehow get them out of the basement to get in the car to drive them off, and the whole thing is just a bit ridiculous, isn't it? But it was early April 2008 when Elizabeth's eldest daughter, Kirsten, who was by now a 19-year-old woman, suddenly became really, really sick, and she was collapsing. She began to have a seizure, foamed at the mouth, turned blue from the lack of oxygen. A hysterical Elizabeth cradled her daughter and begged her not to die. Miraculously, Kirsten was still alive and clinging to life when Fritzl ventured down to the basement the following day, and Elizabeth once again threw herself at her father's feet and pleaded with him to take Kirsten to the hospital. She cried and begged with every ounce of her soul, but didn't really expect him to be affected in any way after so many years of cruelty. But to her utter astonishment, after a few moments of standing in silence and looking down thoughtfully on his dying daughter Kirsten, he did the unthinkable and he said yes. There was a problem, however. Kirsten was a fully grown adult and Joseph was by now an elderly and frail man. He was physically unable to carry her up the stairs on his own. Coincidentally, Rosemary was on vacation in Italy at the time and the other children were fast asleep, so he allowed Elizabeth to finally leave the basement and help him get Kirsten upstairs and outside of the house, and here he planned to call her an ambulance. Elizabeth could hardly believe that this was finally happening. With some difficulty, Joseph and Elizabeth carried their dying daughter upstairs to the ground level of the house. And then, for the first time in 24 long and torturous years, Elizabeth Fritzl stepped outside, looked up at the night sky, and took a big, deep breath of fresh air. Her freedom was brief, however, because once Kirsten was outside, Joseph marched Elizabeth back downstairs and locked her back in the basement. She went willingly because her two other children were still there, and even with the prospect of freedom being literally within her reach, she couldn't bear to leave them behind. An ambulance arrived outside to pick up Kirsten about 30 minutes later. Within days, Elizabeth was astonished when she turned on the TV in her basement and she actually saw the police appealing directly to her to come forward. Her eldest daughter's life depended on it. After more pleading and begging for her father to do something decent for once in his miserable life, he agreed to release all three of his remaining captives once and for all. Fritzl opened the reinforced steel door to the basement and ushered them out. Elizabeth, Felix and Stefan nervously walked upstairs, and then for the very first time in their entire lives, the boys stepped outside into the world, looked up and gasped in childish amazement at the expansive moonlit beauty of the night sky. Joseph then loaded them into his car and drove them to see the doctors, and that brings us full circle back to the events that unfolded once they arrived at the Amstetten Hospital. Can you even imagine? These children have never seen anything other than the walls and the ceiling and the floor of that basement. I can't even imagine it in my head.
It's like, I know I keep saying it, but it is mind-bending. And even not just what they see, but what they hear and feel, the feeling of the air on them and the purity of the air that they're breathing in when they're outside compared to what they have only ever known in the basement, the smell of it. It must have just been such an attack on the senses and just so overwhelming.
I think of when you go camping or when you go somewhere and when you're somewhere that there's no light pollution and you look up and you see the sky, even as a grown adult who knows the outside world, that still can feel very overwhelming, very humbling. It can feel very amazing to sort of look up at the sky. One of my sisters recently went to Botswana, and looking at her photographs of just the landscape, just stretching and stretching and stretching, it's incredible. And I have a concept of the earth and the world and the vastness of it. And it's still amazing to me. So for these children where they have no concept, I mean, did Elizabeth teach them about the outside world? Did she want to keep them sheltered? I just do not know. And the idea of them stepping outside and, like you said, the sounds and the smells.
I think they had a vague concept because they had a television, so they did.
Oh, no, of course they did. Yeah, absolutely.
So they would have had some concept, but, you know, it's one thing to watch it on TV and to then experience it for yourself. It's completely different. But yeah, you're absolutely right. You can, as an adult, you can look up at the night sky and marvel at it and feel that we are part of something so much bigger than we experience down here on this flat earth. I'm just kidding. And but for them, it's just their whole world has been, you know, a few hundred square feet of basement.
Yeah.
And they're suddenly in the outside world. It just, yeah, it's unbelievable to them in terms of what they would have been experiencing. I suppose the only way that we could possibly compare it is if suddenly we were landed on another planet that had aliens on it and all different things that we'd never seen or experienced before. It would just be like, oh my God, this is literally out of this world.
And you think of Stefan, when they say about in the hospital, he's hunched over, that ceiling was 5'4". To be able to stand up tall,
yeah,
move, look up, like, I mean,
he's an 18-year-old man now, you know.
Yeah,
he's going to be, even with having been deprived of nutrients and all of that kind of stuff, he's more than likely over 5'4". So yeah, this is the first time he's ever able to actually stand or attempt to stand up straight and not have something immediately above his head.
Yeah, because Elizabeth was taller than 5'4" herself, so her son is likely to have been, even with the malnourishment and the kind of conditions he grew up in. Elizabeth spent several hours with the police, telling her horrific tale in harrowing detail. Shortly after midnight, the police officers completed their investigation and promptly arrested 73-year-old Joseph Fritzl on suspicion of several serious crimes against his family members, which included incest, rape, enslavement, and the murder of baby Michael through negligence. During questioning, Joseph Fritzl admitted that he had been unlawfully detaining his daughter for the past 24 years. He also provided the police with the keyless entry codes required to gain entry to his basement. The police raided the property and discovered the now empty basement, and there they discovered a wealth of evidence that strongly corroborated Elizabeth's story. On the 29th of April, DNA testing confirmed that Joseph Fritzl was indeed the biological father of all of his daughter's children. Fritzl's defence lawyers argued that although the DNA tests proved incest, evidence was still needed for the allegations of rape and enslavement. Which really frustrates me. I appreciate what they're saying, but it's so disgusting, isn't it? What was perhaps even more disturbing than the atrocities that Fritzl had committed was his arrogant, borderline psychopathic attitude towards it all. After his arrest, he claimed that his behaviour towards his daughter did not constitute rape because it was consensual. It's just so gross. But in recorded extracts from talks with his lawyer, he did say, "I always knew during the whole 24 years that what I was doing was not right, that I must have been crazy to do such a thing. Yet it became a normal occurrence to lead a second life in the basement of my house." There's living a second life, and then there's raping and abusing people. It's absolutely awful. Regarding his treatment of his captives, Fritzl insisted that he was not the beast that the media were making him out to be. He argued that he was often a good father to Elizabeth. He said he often brought her flowers, as well as books and toys for the children. Yeah, because that's what makes you a good father.
Yeah, that makes up for it, yeah.
That makes up for it. He described how he'd often just hang around in the basement, watch videos with the children. He had sat down for meals with them. He also described bringing them a Christmas tree to decorate each year. He said all of this in some creepy, vain attempt to paint himself in a positive light. When asked by detectives why he had so cruelly imprisoned his daughter to begin with, Fritzl told them that he decided to detain Elizabeth after she did not adhere to any rules anymore when she became a teenager. And he said, "I had to do something. I had to create a place where I could keep Elizabeth, by force if necessary, away from the outside world." He essentially showed no remorse at all for what he had done. He only concerned himself with the matter of how much jail time he was going to receive as punishment, even going as far as to ask the police to help him prepare a statement, which he could use to fool a judge into releasing him on the grounds of insanity. Like, that's how calculating he was. He was like, right, how can I get away with this? How can I get the least amount of time?
And also, he's 73 at this point, so he's not going to have that much longer left to live. So he's never going to have to serve, you know, a long sentence, because he's going to be dead potentially in a few years' time. So you would think that maybe he would just face up to it and accept his fate and, you know, kind of get off on the fact that he's gotten away with this for so long and lived his life already. But no, he still wants to get away with it.
Yeah. Fritzl was interviewed extensively by a forensic psychiatrist who raised the delicate subject of Joseph Fritzl's upbringing and the abuse that he had suffered at the hands of his mum, Maria. Fritzl expressed his burning hatred for her, and then he sensationally admitted that she had not simply passed away at home, as he'd originally told everyone that she had. In fact, Fritzl had taken her up to the attic one day and locked her in. He secretly kept her prisoner up there right until she eventually passed away in 1980. Maria Fritzl's remains were never discovered, but given Joseph Fritzl's terrifying capabilities when it came to sadistic cruelty, the detectives had no trouble at all in believing that what he told them was the truth. Fritzl went on to admit that during his prison stint for the earlier rape conviction, he had already begun planning to lock his daughter up so that he could contain and express his evil side. He said, "I was born to rape, and I held myself back for a relatively long time. I could have behaved a lot worse than locking up my daughter." Fritzl was diagnosed with having a severe combined personality disorder, which included borderline, schizotypal and schizoid types, and a sexual disorder. It was recommended that Fritzl receive psychiatric care for the rest of his life. Later reports have revealed Fritzl's premeditated plan to lock his daughter up was not only for discipline, but it was also for his own evil and sexual gratification. After Joseph Fritzl was arrested, Elizabeth was finally reunited with all six of her children, including the ones that Joseph had cruelly confiscated from her all those years ago. Lisa was now 16, Monica was 14, the surviving twin Alexander, age 5. They were all taken into care and moved to another facility in a secret location to avoid the prying eyes of the media and to begin the long and difficult road towards recovery. They all started undergoing intense therapy to deal with what they had been through, and specially trained child psychologists and therapists were brought in to help the family. But I mean, there's being specially trained, and then this is another level, isn't it?
Yeah, they're never going to have encountered anything like this before.
No, and it was clear from the start that the trauma that had been inflicted, especially on Elizabeth and the three surviving basement children, was far worse than anything anyone had thought of. The downstairs children, as they became known, received extensive therapy to help them deal and overcome the damage that had been done to them. Their health and well-being had been severely and irreversibly damaged after being subjected to such an unhealthy environment for such a long stretch of time. The lack of fresh air and sunshine while living confined in the basement, not to mention the extreme abuse that they'd suffered, had caused no end of physiological trauma. Stefan could not walk properly because of his height, so he was 5'8". Obviously, that's 4 inches taller than the ceiling, so he'd have to stoop about, 6 inches to be able to walk around, if not more. And it was revealed that normal everyday occurrences, such as the dimming of lights or the closing of doors, quite understandably plunged Stefan and Felix into anxiety and panic attacks. The three of Elizabeth's children who were raised upstairs by Fritzl and his wife received treatment to help them deal with their anger and their resentment at the events. And it's understood that all the children suffer from long-term genetic problems, which are common to children born into an incestuous relationship. Kirsten was reunited with her family on the 8th of June 2008, when she was awakened from her artificially induced coma, and doctors said that she would make a full recovery. But of course, it was soon apparent that she too was significantly traumatised by what she'd suffered for her entire life, and she also struggled to adjust to normal life. Rosemary's attempts to reconcile with her long-lost daughter did not go well at all. Elizabeth did not trust her. As she saw it, Rosemary had apparently believed Joseph's audacious lies, had essentially abandoned her. She refused to accept that her mother knew nothing of the abuse, which reportedly started when Elizabeth was just 11 years old. And Elizabeth did have a good point to make. Rosemary had knowingly let her husband back into their lives after he'd already served time in jail for rape. She was well aware of how abusive he was. Elizabeth told her that she was largely to blame for what had happened to her, which must have been so heartbreaking for Rosemary to hear, because it's one thing to be terrified of leaving your husband and that element that she was aware of, but nobody's to blame for this apart from Joseph Fritzl. But of course, you understand why Elizabeth would feel that way.
It is a difficult one, though, because, I don't know, part of me thinks Rosemary knew all about this, turned a blind eye. We don't
know,
do we?
She's, so? Wow.
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's possible.
It's always possible, yeah. In March 2009, Joseph Fritzl was jailed for life after pleading no contest to murder by negligence over the death of the baby that he cremated. And the other convictions that he was, you know, he was jailed for life after pleading no contest as well to enslavement, incest, rape, coercion, and false imprisonment. During the proceedings, the court listened in utter disbelief how, over the course of nearly a quarter of a century, he would rape his own daughter at least 3,000 times. This resulted in 7 babies, who themselves often had to watch the abuse as they grew older. 3 of the children were to stay underground, never seeing daylight until their release. And the jury heard how the other 3 mysteriously appeared on the doorstep of Fritzl and his wife Rosemary's home in Amstetten, apparently being abandoned by Elizabeth and delivered to him and Rosemary to be brought up as the Fritzls' own. Somehow, without arousing Rosemary's suspicion or those of the Austrian authorities. Fritzl is now serving his life sentence in a special prison unit for the criminally insane in Austria's Kremstein prison. He is reportedly now suffering from advanced dementia. His condition has deteriorated significantly since he was first put behind bars. A fellow prisoner told local media, Fritzl was and still is separated from everyone else. He has totally withdrawn himself and barely leaves his cell. He doesn't want to contact with others. Altogether, he looks as though he has resigned himself to dying. And he added that the other inmates do not want anything to do with Austria's most infamous convict. Fritzl was jailed in 2009, but under Austrian law, he was told he could possibly seek parole after 15 years. As we record, he is set to be conditionally released from prison on the grounds that he is old and has dementia. His lawyers claim he poses no further threat to society. He will be moved, or potentially when this comes out, he will have been moved into a normal prison. And then from that, if parole is successful, Fritzl will be moved into a nursing home to live out the rest of his life.
Which is just crazy that he will have only served 15 years potentially.
And she was kept there for 24.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just bonkers. I couldn't believe it when I read this.
It's disgusting, isn't it?
It just really shocked me. And despite having dementia and, you know, being very old and frail now, he's very much, you know, chomping at the bit to get out.
And I often kind of feel quite conflicted with things. Should something be a punishment or should it be rehabilitation, you know, especially when it comes to the prison service? But with him, there is no rehabilitation. There is no option for that. He should be punished, in my opinion, for what he's done. He deserves to be punished. No incarceration is going to be enough of a punishment because nothing will even come close to what she went through.
No, and it doesn't matter if he's no longer deemed to be a danger to the public. it's not just about that. It is about punishment, and that punishment needs to be ongoing for the rest of his life.
In June 2017, it was revealed that the Fritzl family home had been sold to a local woman and was being rented out, and it's since become something of a morbid tourist attraction. I just don't understand this. Kind of people travelling from all around the world to go and see it, and the current occupants pay about £700 a month to stay there. So
that's cheap. Because it's a big house.
It's
a big house. Yeah. I didn't know if it had been pulled down, because I didn't know if the... I know that Fritzl was an engineer and was meticulous with building out this basement, but I didn't know if its foundations were actually strong enough. But clearly it's been surveyed and it's fine.
Well, the basement was filled with concrete, so that's been completely filled in. So I guess even if there was any risk of that, that would mitigate anything. But I guess also it was also filled in, to avoid this becoming like a kind of shrine to people that some sick fantasy to go and visit.
Oops. I mean,
you're going to say you want to go.
I would have if the basement was still intact, as how Elizabeth and her children had lived there. I would have wanted to go and see that. Yeah, not. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it is some kind of morbid curiosity, but just
I think
really...
morbid curiosity is fair. But I think they genuinely thought that there would be people who would be more kind of, I don't know, that would find like a satisfaction from it, or like a pleasure from it.
Yeah, or almost some sort of humour in the situation,
yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, I would have only gone just for educational purposes, and to really put myself there and to feel what they all went through, to really try and get a bit of an understanding of that. So I absolutely would have done that, but it's been filled in, so I won't bother.
No. Somewhere I really want to see, and it feels similar, but any time I've been to Amsterdam, I've not managed to make it because the queues are so long, but Anne Frank's, the attic where Anne Frank lived and hid, and it's a museum now, but you can really get a feel, so I've been told, and I really want to visit, because you can get a feel for how small the area was and where they lived. And I can understand what you're saying, that you would want to be able to immerse yourself and understand more. But I do think with this case, the difference, I guess, is that there's people who have survived who are trying to carry on with their lives. So it's probably more fair that this doesn't become a tourist attraction. Not that the Anne Frank Museum is a tourist attraction. It is obviously a tourist attraction, but I don't know, like the phrasing, I kind of want to make sure it's, you know, I feel like this could have easily become quite a grotesque thing.
I get it, yeah. I think that the difference is this is very recent history, whereas Anne Frank is much older.
Yeah, that's true.
Isn't it, you know? And I think we can learn a lot from that. Equally, this you can, but yeah, you're right. There's people that are still alive and trying to get on with their lives, having been the victims here. So it is different.
And Elizabeth was given a new name following Joseph's trial, which saw strict laws introduced to prevent her identity from being revealed. So she lives with her six surviving children in a tiny hamlet in the Austrian countryside, which also can't be identified. It's only ever referred to by the Austrian media as Village X, so they're really, really trying to protect her. In 2018, it was reported by the media that she had fallen in love with her bodyguard, Thomas Wagner, who is 23 years her junior, after spending months together when she was freed. He was assigned to guard her and the six surviving children that she had with her father while she was imprisoned in the cellar. And a source told the newspaper they were a couple. Everyone saw from the beginning how secure she felt with him. And the relationship is said to have given Elizabeth renewed strength in her journey towards normality. So he actually moved in and lived with Elizabeth and the children, which I just thought was something that she could still feel love and trust someone. Like, how can you ever trust someone? But she could, and she found that she could trust this guy.
It's, yeah, wonderful to hear that she found love, and whether that relationship's ongoing, I hope it is. But even if it didn't survive, at least she had that opportunity to find love.
So the children, as I said before, children, but they're now aged between 21 and 35 as of January 2024. They're said to have slept in rooms with the doors permanently open and undergo weekly therapy sessions to help them overcome the traumas that they suffered. But happily, it's been reported that they were all doing really well, in relatively good health, making progress, which I think is so, so important. Rosemary was not formally charged, as the police believed her account. It came to light that she had this really difficult marriage with Joseph, who was controlling and took pleasure in humiliating her publicly. And I think, even like you said at the very beginning of part one, even at this time in 2008, we still didn't have as much of an understanding and knowledge of coercive control. So the fact that she was believed at this point is still really major. If this was nowadays, I don't think there'd be any doubt that she would be believed and that actually she would be seen as a victim too.
I completely agree. I just have a question mark over it, personally.
That's
my own problem.
I think you're wrong, but you're allowed to to feel that way. And you're not alone as well. A lot of people do still think, did she know more than she... Or did she suspect anything? And who can suspect something and not try and find out? In 2012, Joseph divorced Rosemary because she stopped visiting him in prison. And like the rest of the family members who were given new identities, Rosemary did change her name to ensure protection and privacy. So she's reported to be living by herself and lives on a modest pension, makes extra money by selling paintings and handcrafted products, because the whole Fritzl family was said to be financially ruined after Fritzl's arrest, which you can understand and it makes sense, but it's something you don't really think about, isn't it, at the time? All these people, he's gone to prison, but all these people still need to live. Like, where are they going to live? How are they going to live?
They've not had an education or a proper education, the children. How are they going to go out and get a job, you know?
Yeah. And how would you ever be able to get a job?
Exactly.
Yeah. Like Elizabeth, Rosemary has cut off all ties with Joseph, and it seems like Rosemary and Elizabeth have worked out their differences and have made some progress in their relationship. So they've started to spend time together. Elizabeth even allows her three children who have raised by Rosemary to go and visit her, because obviously to those children, they'd been raised
Rosemary
since
was
babies.
Their mum.
Rosemary was their mum. I don't know whether she told them the truth. I don't know how they were brought up, but even knowing that she was their grandmother, she brought them up. So I thought that was a very kind-hearted thing for Elizabeth to do, to allow these children to see this mother figure of theirs. 2 years after they escaped from the dungeon, a handmade poster that had been created by Elizabeth and her children was displayed in the Amstetten town centre. The message thanked local people for their support, and I thought I would finish the episode with this quote. The poster said, "We, the whole family, would like to take the opportunity to thank all of you for your sympathy at our fate. Your compassion is helping us greatly to overcome these difficult times, and it shows us there are good and honest people here who really care for us. We hope that soon there will be a time where we can find our way back into a normal life." So there we go. What an episode.
Isn't it just, I'm glad we've gone there. I'm glad we've done it. There's lots of facets to the story that I had completely forgotten about and lots that I just didn't know. So yeah, I think it's a superbly well-rounded presentation of what happened here in what is one of the most shocking cases of our lifetimes, I think.
Mm.
Well, we'll be back next week, hopefully with something less dire. And we'll see you then for another episode.
See you then. Bye.